If you haven't heard, women in Hollywood are doing it for themselves. And our guest today, Madeline Deutsch, is getting it done. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's I Talk Movies.
I love this song, by the way. Hey, everyone. Welcome to I Talk Movies on Popcorn Talk. I'm your host, Tammy Govea, and we have the singer in the house. It's Madeline Deutsch. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me. That's so cool, you guys. We put this out like 48 hours ago.
It was perfect timing when I saw this song. So wait, here's my favorite thing to do is come in.
The build.
Here we go.
Oh my god. I'm so glad you like
this. I love this song. It's so poppy.
You're so sweet. This is
a happy song.
This is a fun one. Yeah. I love this. This is an electronics project I do with my friend Piers Barron called Bleach.
And okay, it is Bleach.
Yeah, it's
okay,
Bleach.
Great.
No, we were like in the studio for way too long and we should have come up with a band name that people could pronounce, but I think we were just like in there for 10 hours one day.
I think I was trying to give it like a German accent, like Blicht or something, but I wasn't sure.
I know. You know, band names, it's like all band names are inherently bad and hard. So like Bleach is no exception. It's, we just like, we're in the studio too long, I swear to God.
So the song came out this week, right?
Yeah, the song, this we just released this like literally 48 hours ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. People have to look for it.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great song.
Thank you.
And it's
so
in the
sweet.
Film. It's in the film.
It is.
The film being The Year of Spectacular Men. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. You've got so much going on.
I know. I mean, I guess. I don't know. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Part of one of the things that, among many things, but one of the things that was so important to me about this movie was I did all the score and the music supervision for it. So every song in the movie I picked. So I got to also pick my own songs.
That's
because
fantastic.
I'm a narcissist. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what the film's about.
The Year of Spectacular Men is about this college grad, Izzy. She's 22 and she is sort of rudderless and trying to get to know who she is. And she sort of tries to get to know who she is through dating these five guys over 1 year. And it ends up that she gets to know herself more through her relationship with her little sister. So it starts, you think it's kind of like a typical rom-com, but it really ends up being like a love story between sisters.
Yeah, and finding out who she is.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. It's a lot of it is about discovery and identity, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got the trailer clip that I wanted to share.
Hi, I'm Izzy. I've never been good in matters of the heart. Never had that moment, you know, where everything falls into the perfect spot. Who knows? Maybe this will be the year.
You'll say that it's all right.
Look at you, big sister.
I thought you were just here for a fashion thing.
Just a fashion thing?
Oh my God, Sabrina, can I get a pic?
Yeah. I'm thinking about going to LA.
You could come with me.
So this is the I'm going back to Hollywood to become a big star like my sister phase.
I can send you those fruit bouquet things with the pineapple on the stick.
Pineapple!
I still think we can work this out.
I think it's over.
You can never trust a guy who has 20 of the same shirt in the same color.
Your post-breakup, your pre-real world.
Why don't you take the year for yourself? You're a millennial. You can try the whole, like, having fun in your 20s thing.
Smooth move. I bet you get a lot of girls on their backs every day. I'll work on that one some more.
I guess I'm just wondering how you ever meet the right person.
Hi.
They can't just walk right into your life and command you to pay attention.
Yes. Was I supposed to pound?
I'm doing a scene with a really hot new guy from class.
When I said there are other fishies in the sea, I meant like look through the sea, not immediately at the first person that shows up.
Did you learn that in your sensitivity training course, Sabrina?
365, it's so good to see you.
There's nothing accidental about any of this.
You're my big sister.
I just want to move on and feel better. Bitches need bitches.
He kept asking me to tell him how big his peen is.
Oh, that's everything to a guy. You just gotta lie.
Yeah, I agree.
I love that trailer.
So would you agree?
About? The last part of that? I mean, God, I wrote it. So yeah, again. No, I mean, I think we discussed the sort of intricacies and the subtleties of dating a lot in this movie.
It's so, okay, so there's so many amazing things. This film is super layered. And
the
layer that kind of starts it all is the fact that it's such a family affair, this whole project. It's an independent film, you know, and I don't know if people really understand the blood, sweat, and tears
that
goes into doing an independent film, because you're not getting thrown $100 million to make a film. So if you're not passionate about it, that's what carries you through.
Absolutely. You know? You hit the nail on the head. It's like I say, really, to anyone who like wants to make a movie, I'm like, if you don't feel like you are going to be interested in still pushing this story forward in 5 years, don't make it.
Yeah.
Because that's really what it usually is, like the lifespan of an independent film. And that even is kind of short. Sometimes they take, you know, forever to get done.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I loved, so your mother, Leah Thompson. So I grew up with Leah Thompson. Okay. Mm. So iconic of an actress as she is. Yeah. I know that she's been directing, been primarily television.
Yeah.
But this is her film debut, right? As a director?
Her featured debut as a director.
Yeah. And then, so Zoe, your sister, is an actress. She has touched on producing in the past, but is this kind of the first film where she's like full blown?
This was her first one that she got a producer credit on and deserved it 10 million times over. Like, she truly produced on the film. You know, she did unbelievable things. Like, when we ran out of money for wardrobe, she would be like contacting every designer team and getting them to like send us boxes of stuff. Like, she was kind of as down and like dirty and dirt under the fingernails as we all were. You know, she cared a lot about trying to help us shepherd it through.
Yeah,
that was really important.
Because you can get lost, because you wrote the screenplay.
Yeah.
You composed the music for it, and you acted in it.
Yeah.
So I can see how you need that support system around you to kind of keep you on track, or if there are notes to be given so that you can keep objective about it.
Notes I had less of a problem with, because I was able to like switch to writer brain between actor and writer brain. But I will say it was so nice having my sister there on set to have my back, because I got really lost in this character. Like, there was a lot of stuff that would happen on set throughout the day that I would be really unaware of. Like, I was so in this person that I would just be like, doop, 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 like not realizing what was going on. But my sister, because she had this producer hat on, was sort of able to like step in and like be involved with that stuff so that I didn't have to be, which was like very nice.
Was it hard for you to leave Izzy at the set and go home? Yeah.
At the very end of filming, I don't tend to think of myself as like actor-y. I don't have like an actor brain. I've worked a lot as an actor, but I don't talk about acting the way that a lot of people do, which is like, well, when I'm transforming into a you know, like, I really don't approach it that way. And so I was surprised by how emotional I got. I think what I thought was going to be our last day of shooting, we ended up going back for pickups. But when I thought it was my last day with her, Izzy, my character, I was a wreck. Like, I was really sad.
What was so emotional about it
I think it just felt like I learned a lot from her. She's not like me.
What I was going to ask.
Yeah. Okay. And I wanted to keep some of the qualities about her that I really loved. Like, my mission, I always try to have like a mission statement about like the film as a whole and then the characters within it and then mission statement for the music and all these different things. And my mission statement for Izzy was, she always has the best intentions. And that's a kind of person I think that's really lovely, you know, like, even if they do something messed up, it's like they really don't mean it. Always have the best intentions. And so I was like, I wonder if I could carry that with me into my life a little bit more.
There's a purity of heart in that.
I'm not like that. Yeah. I'm like kind of like a negative thinker. Yeah. I was like, how do I keep her?
So how did you come up with her then? I mean, she's so... How did it start? Did the character of Izzy start it all? Or...
How was she born?
The framework of the guys was the thing that started the script.
To the Spectacular Man.
Yeah. Okay. That was, I thought it was a fun kind of framing device to have it be very clean. Like, it's one whole year. It's five guys over the course of that year. It's four whole seasons. Like, those were things that were appealing to me. I liked how clean it felt. And I... when I started to pull from experiences that I had had, it's not autobiographical, but when I started to work through the things that I wanted to keep in the movie, and I very quickly realized, like, that this was going to be a character who was going to be doing some things that your average audience doesn't like. I don't think they see this kind of girl on screen that much. So I knew that she had to have a lot of, like, beautiful qualities about her as well. You know, she's as responsible as the guys, but I just knew from, like, a writing standpoint that she would have to have this, like, sort of pluckiness and this sort of buoyancy to get her through the movie, because without it, I think it would just be, like, one kind of a series of unfortunate events. You know what I mean?
Well, one thing that I noticed, so I think I wrote this down. The New York Times said, "The pleasure of watching actors throw lines back and forth is particularly evident between Izzy and Sabrina." Mm-hmm. So I read that and I thought, well, that's lovely. But what they're saying is this film actually has conversations between people.
I love you for saying that. Thank you.
And that's what I love about this film. Thank you. Just harkened back. I'm a classic film fanatic, yeah. You know? And so when they didn't have the special effects and that sort of thing, it had everything to do with story and it had everything to do with relationships. Right. And I think that's what resonated with me the most about the film and about Izzy. And every Sabrina and Sebastian and all the characters are so fully fleshed out.
Thank you.
That you care about them.
Thank you so much.
So kudos. Kudos to you.
Thank you.
For that.
That's also good actors, though. I mean,
oh, for sure.
Like, Avan Jogia in particular, who plays Sebastian.
He's crazy good.
He's so good. Like, he is one of my closest friends, and I just... he, like, to be able to play a character that, spoiler alert, you know, is not faithful to their partner, and still, in my opinion, and I think in a lot of people's opinion, at the end of the movie, you're still... like, rooting for him.
Absolutely.
And that requires a specific kind of actor.
Yeah.
You know? And so, I mean, even, it's funny, like, even Jesse Bradford, who's like, I just love Jesse so much, who plays the first kind of guy that I date in the movie, like, he's the worst.
Aaron.
In
the Aaron. Oh my gosh.
He's the worst.
Maddie, let me just tell you, he made me crazy. I was watching the film at work on my lunch break.
Yeah.
And the way he spoke to you.
Yeah.
I just...
yeah.
So, to, like you said, to be able to bring that,
yeah,
to the character, and...
I know.
He was so good. I hated him. He was so good.
I love you. Thank you for saying that. But he's so... you know, Jesse is so... he's got this quality about him that's so charming that even when he's being the biggest douche...
well, he said everything with a smile on his face.
That's the Nicholson trick, yeah, isn't it? That's, yeah, the Jack Nicholson, yeah, trick of, yeah, like, I'm gonna literally be a sociopath but smile through, yeah, the whole thing. And then you're like, I can't stop watching him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we had amazing actors. Like, I couldn't ever have asked for anything more amazing than these people.
I love the fact that... I thought, should I say this or not? Like, sure. I think for... you know, an hour, however long, an hour and 40 minutes that the film is. Mm-hmm. It was so much fun to be able to play in Izzy's neuroses.
Oh, thank you.
And not,
I love you.
Because you can resonate. I mean, I think a lot of people, whether it's, you know, millennial or older, can totally resonate with feeling scared and confused and insecure. And I think the beauty, too, of what you did was... as we're going along for the ride with Izzy in the beginning,
yeah,
you know, the first few instances, mm-hmm, we're like, oh my God, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. But you see her growth.
Yeah.
You see her grow through the film. So the relationships are different and then the experiences are different.
I say, I'm so touched because when people get the movie, you're having one conversation, and when people don't get the movie, you're having another conversation.
So what are they?
You know,
what are they?
I think
People that don't... Here's what it is. You specifically touched on neuroses and definitely mental illness. Like, Izzy struggles with depression, like, hardcore. Yeah. And there's people who, like, overlook it completely and are just like, what's wrong with her? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. It's that small thing called depression, anxiety, panic. You know, just things that people struggle with. But I don't really know that those elements of the human condition are represented in film that much. Mm-hmm. I mean, we certainly don't talk about it a lot in this country. I think when people feel maybe uncomfortable with it or feel like I didn't represent it quite the right way, they just go right away to being like, what's wrong with this girl? How come she can't get it together? They don't start by being like, she has a certain kind of pathos, like, which is what you said.
And it's in the story of why she is the way she is.
Absolutely.
It's not like you never figure out, you know, why she's on this emotional journey.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, thank you. I love you.
Aww.
Do you want to be best friends?
Okay.
Okay.
We're going to In-N-Out.
Yay. Let's go. I can smell it from here. I know it's down the block.
One thing that absolutely cracked me up. So it was one of the interviews that you gave with your mom, with Leah. Should I call her your mom or Leah?
I honestly call her Leah all the time because she's like a little bit ADD and I can't get her attention. I'll be like, Leah. Someone recently was like, why do you call your mom Leah?
I wasn't sure. So I'll say Leah. So
you can totally say Leah.
So Leah said, in regards to the making of the film, that there were a lot of complicated pieces.
Yeah.
He said, it says a lot about what a jerk first-time feature screenplay writer I was. There were literally 60 locations.
Yeah, it was
in the
psychotic.
Movie. It takes place in 4 major cities.
Mm-hmm.
It takes place over the course of a year.
Mm-hmm.
We needed 4 actual seasons, and we needed 6 leading men.
Mm-hmm.
The scope of it was so rude. That's what you said.
Is that a direct quote? I said the scope of it was
so rude. And I'm thinking... What were another? It's kind of Izzy. Like, what were you thinking?
I clearly was not.
Oh my gosh! The fact that you got this made.
Yeah, thank you.
Is amazing.
You're really. I really want to be friends with you. Like, you fully get it. You know what? The ignorance, I think, is beautiful in a way. Like, just being. I knew. Getting an independent film off the ground and through to its birth was going to be incredibly complicated. I just wasn't thinking about all the production elements, though, from a writing standpoint. I was just writing the story, which I think is beautiful because it's what makes the film the film. But absolutely, my next feature, like, takes place in one night, like, between two people.
Did you ever have someone say, okay, you know what? We can't do this.
100%, and we did not make the movie with them.
Got it.
Because it became evident that it was going to be special in its scope because it was not like an independent film, right? So, like, it kind of looks like a studio movie but feels like an independent film.
Right.
And I think that's where we actually got in trouble on the festival circuit. Like, people were sort of like, I don't understand this film because it was unique that way. It wasn't just like, you know, a bunch of, like, handheld cameras and, like, a...
It didn't have
gritty
that grit.
Setting.
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
We on purpose made it a really pretty film. Like, we shot on these beautiful anamorphic lenses, and we cared a lot about, you know, our DP, Brian Koss, is a psycho, and he's just brilliant, and he helped us make it so, so gorgeous. So I think festivals were confused by that, and I think that's what made the film its own thing. It's what made it unique, but it was my ignorance that led us there, which was, like, writing a script that's so difficult to make. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Without money.
The support, because again, going back to the family element.
Yeah.
The chemistry that you have with your sister, like, just because she's your sister and just because Leah's your mother doesn't necessarily constitute automatic chemistry.
It's true.
On screen.
It's true.
So I was really, I don't know if I should call it surprise, because I know Leah's work and I've heard so much about Zoe. Like, they're good, solid actresses.
Yeah, amazing.
But I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
I didn't know. And you guys are, like, bouncing off, especially you and Zoe. Are
yeah.
Like ping pong.
People say that. It's so funny because it's like, I feel like I'm used to watching that chemistry now. And it doesn't strike me as being strange anymore, but it is a, like, it is kind of kind of, what's the word? Frenetic, almost, yes, in a sense, yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost to the point where you should make more movies together.
I know. I love acting with
Because when
her.
You have that kind of, not just chemistry, there's an intangible to it between you guys.
My sister talks about this all the time, and she's so brilliant. She's like, chemistry is... It's not quantifiable.
It
right?
isn't.
Like, you don't know no. why or how it shows up. And you make such a good, like, everything you say, you're so smart. Like, it's true. Honestly, I think people did think, oh, well, it'll just probably be good because they're sisters. But totally not, you know? And you see couples who are actually married on screen and you're
yeah,
like, it's not the move.
We've seen those films. It's like, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
I know.
Is this them in real life? Like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
It's cringeworthy.
Yeah.
It's cringeworthy.
I think we just got lucky. We really didn't know. And the movie ended up getting a little bit retooled to be more like that. Like, the movie was very much about, like, Izzy and these five guys with what I thought was this subplot about me and my or the two characters as sisters.
So that changed over the course of filming?
Absolutely. I mean, the ending of the film changed. And when the ending of the film changed, so did a lot of the end speeches in the film.
Because the ending changed.
The ending changed, yeah.
How could it have ended otherwise? Interesting.
Yeah. Like, not with a nice, like, ribbon.
Yeah.
And it didn't feel right. We shot it. What was also exhausting but helpful about this is that we shot it in over the course of like 7 months, the movie. So we shot 19 days of principal photography in the fall, shut down for 3 months, went for 2 days in the snow in Tahoe, 2 days on the street in San Francisco, shut down again for another 3 months. And then
that's actually great.
Yeah.
Because it gives you time to take a look at what's going on and edit and kind of figure out, are we on the right track?
Well, after we shot the snow stuff and the San Francisco stuff, we realized pretty definitively that the ending did not work great.
Did that freak you out?
No, we had already kind of... It was so funny. Okay, we realized the ending didn't really work great after the first 19 days of shooting. Because then my mom started cutting. And she was cutting for like 2 months. And she was like, okay, we got to work on it. And then when we went back to shoot in San Francisco, luckily a lot of the stuff we shot in San Francisco and reshot were things at the end of the movie in the third act. So we were like able to sort of fix it. Cutting again for another 3 months. And then when we were going to go back to New York in the spring, we also realized that the endings now needed to be bolstered in the beginning a little bit better. So we shot some pickup stuff of like beginning scenes in the film in New York, like totally guerrilla unit style with like one camera. And our producer was like holding the bounce. I don't think we had sound for most of it. Yeah, it was crazy.
So you understand the synchronicity that was in play during all of this.
I mean, it was crazy.
Right? Because...
It was crazy.
Yeah.
But I got lucky, really lucky, that like for all these things that seemed like production nightmares ended up being such a blessing that I was able to acknowledge where the film did not work and then try to help make it work.
What do you mean?
Like in the kind of changing of the ending, in the kind of bolstering of the ending in the beginning and doing these sort of rewrites every time we went back to shoot.
So were you challenged by that? Like when you're faced with a situation like that, it's like, okay, this isn't working. Because some people would completely freak out. And
somebody said something once to me that was so valuable. They weren't talking about filmmaking at all, but they were talking about a business. They owned a business. And they were like, it doesn't work. You must change it. And I love
that. It's
very
Yoda-like.
It stuck with me because I think people fall in love with their darlings, right? But when it doesn't work on screen, like, it's so evident.
And I think, too, as a writer, you get that because you know 90% of being a writer is throwing stuff away.
I can't tell you.
It's like, so hard.
It's so hard.
It's so hard. But you understand that this is just part of the journey and part of the process. And you exercise that muscle of letting it go and starting over again.
I mean, to me, as a writer, the hardest thing to do is figure out when to push and when to let it go. And I don't have a good answer. Like, there have been so many times where I'm writing where I'm stuck, where I pushed really hard and made it through. And other times where...
You mean to try to make it work?
You don't know until you're dealing with it in that particular situation. But I honestly think, not to be like too spiritual, but I'm going to be. I honestly think that's one of the hardest things about life in anything, in romantic relationships, friendships, in work, in craftsmanship, is when to push and when to love.
Absolutely.
Like, when do you just, like, love a situation and be like, okay, this is just what it is. I'm just going to, like, let it be. Or when do you push? When do you go, no, I'm going to push through this. I'm going to blah, blah, blah. I'm going to make it work. I'm going to...
So yeah.
I honestly think about this, when to push and when to love. I think about it in almost every situation in my life.
Because you get to that point sometimes, like you said, in anything, of, should it be this hard?
Yeah.
Or should I let this go? Should it be this hard? There's that fine line that you walk.
Well, I had a really illuminating conversation with somebody about writing recently where... somebody said, well, do you ever get writer's block? And it was me and a couple other writers talking, and we were like, well, we never operate under the idea that it was going to be easy. So, like, when you... I don't even think about it like writer's block, because I never thought I would not be blocked. Like, it's just always hard, you know? Like, I never thought. This is why I struggle so much with the way, like, songwriting and writing is represented in film and TV, because it always looks like someone just gets, like, a gleam in their eye, and yes, then it just comes to them, yes, like, as if the angels...
People wait for inspiration.
And I'm like, that's not it's an active choice every day. It's like, gonna go get on the treadmill. Yeah. It's like the same thing, yeah, you know? So, you know, I don't know. It's tough.
Let's talk a little bit about the music the film. It's interesting because the music is seamless in the film. I mean,
I love you.
You were so funny.
No, I really mean so much to me. It's so not BS.
For every moment in the film, the music supported that moment.
Thank you.
You really nailed it. And sometimes the music can be overpowering. Mm. Sometimes you don't even notice it,
mm-hmm,
which is sad. But here it is. The music is just as alive and its own independent thing as much as the film. And it's a kind of relationship. They have this relationship.
That's going to be on my headstone. Thank you. So when kudos. I die, it will be that quote that you just said on the gravestone.
I think it was a really long quote.
No, it works. It's fine. I'll just get someone who's good at engraving.
But what came first? So you wrote the screenplay first, and then you thought, okay, well, I need a song for this scene? Or how does it work?
I appreciate that you're asking the question, because it sort of makes me think that they feel tonally and texturally so similar that you're like, I don't know which one came first.
Yeah.
I think this is the benefit of, like, writing the movie and being in the movie and doing the music, is it's like, it's all coming through me. That stuff was coming through me, so I didn't have to, like, work hard to wonder whether something fit texturally or tonally in the film. I just was like, no, that belongs. The script was done. We got the money. We shot it. Blah, blah, blah. My mom, God bless her, you know, we fight about music stuff. We don't fight about a lot, but we fight about music. Like, we disagree. God, those were honestly, the biggest fight we got in on this movie was about the music, because I was going through a lot of, like, personal changes in my life after we'd finished shooting. And she was like, great, so when are you going to start the score? And I was like, never. I'm not scoring this. And she was like, no, but you are. And I was like, but I'm not. And we got in a huge fight about it, because she, as my mother, it's funny, when we were shooting the movie, I don't think we acted like mother-daughter. I don't think we acted like best friends. I think we acted like partners. This was one of the only moments where it was like mother. Like, she came in and was like, no, I'm not going to let you be self-destructive. You will do this.
So did you not have the intention of scoring the film originally?
I did in the beginning.
And then all the stuff was happening.
And
then it was like
so many years went by, yeah, so much shooting, so much rewrites. And
can you just say that again? Because it took years to do this.
Yeah, I mean, okay, the film is out on iTunes and Amazon, yes, VOD and on demand. Select theaters nationwide. But from when I started writing the script to now, it's 4.5 years. So, like, that's And it's funny because, like, anyone who makes independent film is going to watch this and be like, yeah, so right. What, buddy?
You're a little baby.
But, yeah, mine took 25 years. Like, I feel like it's a competition in independent film, like, whose movie took longer right. to get made. It's sort of like battle scars, yeah. battle wounds. And it's really not that long. But it's just so much time went by, and I was tired. And she kicked me in the pants.
Emotionally
about
tired.
It. I was, yeah. And yeah. my mom, good old mom, my director, was just like, no, you're going to do the score for this movie. But what was complicated about it was the movie was not picture locked. We ran into a money timing crunch situation, and no one should ever go in to score a film that's not picture locked. I had to. It was incredibly sketchy. I had kind of written the three main themes for the movie on piano. What was requested by my director, aka my mom, was she wanted a very simple piano theme that was like her wish for the score. So I wrote three kind of simple piano themes, and I used them. Like, one of the themes was like called Izzy F'd Up. So it was like used for the moments where like she really knows she screwed up. One of the themes was like Izzy and Sabrina. It was just called Izzy and Sabrina. It was for their very emotional moments. And then there was one called Izzy and Sabrina Light, which was for like
their version.
Moments. Yeah, the L-I-T-E. And as you can tell, I spent a lot of time naming those cues. And so I wrote those. And then I only had, because of like the money and the timing thing, I only had 5 days we could afford in the studio for me to go in. And I recorded over 50 pieces of music.
Oh my gosh.
Because I needed multiple versions of everything. In case the cut started to change of the film. And so I called my friend Denver Daly, who is a genius. He's like, he's an Omaha native, and he, wait, now that I say that, is he? I think he is. And he is in all these amazing bands, De Desaparecidos and Statistics and Harmar Superstar. And he's like a indie, he's got more indie street cred than anyone. And I had written the themes, but I knew that I needed someone to come in and have like an outside perspective.
Yeah.
So
push it out a little.
Yeah. So he was in Brazil, and I was like, you're getting on a plane, buddy. And so he came in, and we had this like crazy, just renegade 5 days in a studio together of just like bashing stuff out. And so that was how the score got done. Not neatly, not cleanly, but it got done.
That was the gritty part of it, it sounds like.
That was Narnar.
Yeah.
Narnar. And I, you know, it's not like I had like a producer for the score. So it was really just me and him. And we had the movie up on a monitor.
Right.
And with our engineer, Rick, who was like such a doll, he put up with us for like, oh my God, so many long nights and days. And we would just put the movie up on monitor, and I would go and play a cue, and we would put it up against the scene and be like, I think it needs a Rhodes. Or I think it needs like a synth, or maybe let's do the theme on guitar, or like it was ratchet the way that we did it. It was not like me in a chamber orchestra. You know what I mean?
Well, people need to know too about your musical background, because you went to school.
I did.
For that.
So sweet.
Yeah.
I love
so it. It's not like you didn't have the knowledge and the honed intuition to know like when you throw out those words, we need a synth, and I'm like, synthesizer, because I don't have that background.
Yeah,
but you know, thankfully you had that. It's probably why Leah said, "No, you are doing this because you have the capacity to do this."
She really pushed me. I mean, it's it's funny because I have to check myself too. Like, I've had a couple people ask me, like, "Are you interested in doing?" Because so Women in Film just released a statistic recently that I hope this is the right one, but they said they looked at the 230 top grossing movies in the last year, and less than 1% of those were scored by women. So like, there's a lot of in the national conversation about like women directors, women writers, and like yes. people are not talking about the composer side of it, which is like very, very bad. I know more brilliant female musicians. I mean, the list does not end. I don't know why. I think it's probably just like a Wiener festival. Like, there's just so many guys in it.
It's a mindset. It just takes time to shift that mindset and get women exposed.
And
the work needs to be exposed.
I have to check myself too, because people have asked me, like, are you interested in scoring other movies? And my immediate thing is to like apologize and like make myself small and be like, no, I'm not really good at scoring movies. I just was able to do this one because it was mine and I wrote it and I understood it. And it's like such BS. Like, I think it's tough. Like, I have to check myself and just be like, why are you doing that? It's
can
hard.
Can I just hold the reflection of Izzy in that moment with Aaron toward the end?
Yeah.
Where he comes, you guys bump into each other by accident.
At the party.
Right. And he just lays into you. Uh-huh. But at that time, Izzy knows her self-worth.
Yeah. And right? She's like, I don't think so, buddy. I love that scene.
You're not my boyfriend. You can't do this. As if, like, if he was your boyfriend, he could.
Everyone always says that.
Like, what are you talking about? But it goes back to what you were saying of, you know, finding yourself apologizing. It's like,
totally.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no.
Lena Dunham wrote an amazing piece about the word sorry. And Karen,
we use it too much.
I think she wrote it for Glamour or something like that. I know I'm wrong. Yeah. I'm just throwing out things that are not facts. Don't listen to me. But it was incredibly impactful to me how she talked about, like, she says in this essay, she's like, I literally apologize for everything. I'll be like, excuse me, sorry. It's like, what? You just said excuse me, you know? And
it's a very conscious choice.
It's part of it. You have to check yourself.
Yes. Exactly. There was one moment, well, there are a lot of moments in the film that I had a reaction to.
Tell me.
Well, I'm going to do more than tell you. I'm going to actually walk you through it or talk you through it. Because it's like, I don't know, 15 seconds of that in the film. And it's not a spoiler alert or anything.
We already spoiled a lot.
I know, we already spoiled a lot.
It's fine.
So you're going to play the role of Izzy because that's who you are. And I will do the other role. And it's literally, I typed out, this is your writing. So
it was God.
It's this particular scene, though. It was like, oh my God. So here's your script.
Oh.
So I will start. Tell me your name.
No.
Tammy? Okay, Tammy's a little rough.
I'm from Los Angeles, not like Tacoma, Washington. Okay, that's an improv. And I'm like, that's an improv.
Was it an improv?
This is not written. This was an improv. That was me and Zach Roerig. We were like hitting the ball back and forth.
And I was like, okay, wait a minute. First of all, I'm not from Tacoma, Washington. I am from San Francisco. Granted, it's a little close to Washington State, but come on.
I'm dying.
Come on.
That's so funny. Oh my God.
Of all the names, like really?
Oh my God. I had a friend come up to me the other week and she goes, "That you said you... Damn it, this is coming back to haunt me now. This improv is coming back to haunt me right now, but there was another improv that came back to haunt me recently. My girlfriend goes, you said my ex-boyfriend's name in the film. You wrote it in, and it's a very uncommon name, and why was it in there? And I was like, what are you talking about? And she was like, no, that's his name right here. And she showed me the clip, and I was like, that's an improv. Like, I can't. There was a lot of improv in the film.
That's fantastic. I didn't know that.
A lot of improv in the film.
Love that.
So apparently all of our improv is just insulting people's names. I can't. That's so sad and weird.
That's insane.
Oh my God.
That is insane.
That's so funny.
One other thing before we skedaddle. This is a quote that you said. To have a point of view is scary. When you say, this is what I think, it's so much easier for someone to come for you.
I love, that's so, you
love
what?
Your quote. This is you being,
I love myself.
This is a profound statement.
I actually need to take a picture of that you wrote down because it's funny. You do a lot of interviews and people ask you the same questions, like kind of over and over again. This has been such a treat because you are like an amazing angel from heaven. And you've asked me so many things. I feel so flattered and honored to be here with you right now and that you see the film and understand it. But that was an interview a few weeks ago. I don't even know what interview, but I remember as I said it, both my mom and my sister were like, "Burr." Like they looked at me and they were like, that came from somewhere else, which is true. I think really true. I mean, this movie feels that way to me. Sincerity and heartfeltness are sort of like dirty words in independent filmmaking. I think being sincere is not something you see a lot of the time in a lot of independent films.
It takes courage.
Yeah, we made that choice. I honestly, like, above anything, I think that's the bravest thing we did, is like we had a point of view and we stuck with it, and we did make a movie that is earnest.
Mm.
Like, I had a friend who's been an actor for a million years say to me, he was like, the movie is genuinely earnest. Yeah. And I mean that in like a good way.
Yeah. It's simple and real and
yeah.
Earnest.
I think critics too, like, it's easier for them to come for earnestness and sincerity, probably. That's why I think the fact that La La Land was such a giant hit made me so happy. Because the film is, like, very genuinely earnest, you know? They're not making fun of breaking out in song. They really wanted to, you know? So, thank you for saying that.
Has this helped your voice, this process of making the film? Has it made it a little easier for you to speak that voice? Or is it still, like, really hard?
I think I've always been opinionated. I think for me... I think maybe if my mom was here, she'd say yes for her. She comes from another generation where it's like, she always calls it like the head tilt or like the lash back.
You just did what you were told.
Yeah. And like you're taught to just like apologize a lot. And she's, my mom's so funny. She's always saying that like me and my sister are just like incapable of the head tilt, which I think we're not great at it. But I do think this process has made me sort of realize that like that it is scary to have a point of view, and that's the good thing about being a little bit young and a little bit arrogant and a little bit ignorant, is that you're like, no, I have a point of view, come on. And then you grow up a couple of years and you're like, oh my god, I have a point of view, you know. And that's I think the good thing about like maybe doing something like this at starting at 22 instead of like 27. Now I feel like I've got a few more emotional tools in the tool belt. And I'm like, well, maybe don't write a movie about your, you know, experience in your early 20s. But no, I'm glad. I'm really glad that we did, you know.
What other projects do you have coming down the pike?
I have a feature film.
Oh, my gosh. In one room?
I have a feature
film. With two people?
No, not one room. Thank God. No, I have a feature film. Takes place in one night. One night, but they move around a lot. I don't think I'm talented enough to try and direct something in one room, for sure. And it's just about, it's like an inverse Before Sunrise. It's like about a couple falling apart instead of falling in love.
You're writing?
I wrote it, I'm going to direct it, and I'm going to score it.
Have you directed before?
Yeah, I've directed some music videos. And I love it, and I'm constantly kind of working with sort of my favorite actors. You know, I think it's interesting. It sounds really stupid, but doing like these self-tape auditions, which have become my favorite thing in the world to do with other people, it's sort of like this guerrilla style of learning how to direct, because you're not really directing. You're not really on a set. You're not really dealing with all these people. But as far as working with another actor, you're taking a piece of material and you're looking at it, and essentially you know nothing about it. And you're like watching the actor, looking at the material, and you're like, okay, I'm literally just going off of basic instinct and how to make the scene more layered, textured, complex, interesting, give it like a better arc, even though you don't know anything about the material. So it's fun. It's like I think a good way to like practice as a director, because you're just like, I'm going totally off like my gut, right, and what I think makes the scene better. But yeah, I've done a bunch of music videos and all that kind of jazz. I think I'm going to do short this summer, but really it's this feature is like my baby.
Where can people find you on social media?
On Instagram. Are you easy greasy? Yeah, on Instagram. I'm there all the time. You can catch me outside. I'm at Maddie Deutsch on Instagram and on Twitter, but my Twitter's like kind of pathetic compared to my Instagram. It's really not as good.
And the film is out. It's also on demand.
Yes. Right? The film is on iTunes, Amazon, The Year of Spectacular Men. You can buy it, rent it. You can see it, I think, still at the Lemley Santa Monica.
I noticed that. Uh-huh. I love that theater.
Yeah, it's a great theater. And I have to say, too, like, shouts are majorly out to independent theaters for still repping little movies.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, my favorite thing in the world to do is, like, just go to any Lemley and be like, what's the movie I don't know is coming out? And then watch that one.
And they're always amazing.
Incredible. Like, I just... I think the tide will turn again. I think right now we're in a little bit of like the dark ages with theatrical. I really believe it'll come back. I think vinyl sales jumped 300% in the last 2 years.
Fingers crossed.
Like, my dad, my dad didn't think that record players were going to come back. Come on. Like, so, you know, I think we'll come out of it eventually. I think everybody needs something to do with their day. Come on.
Absolutely.
I don't want to sit in my house all day. But if you want to sit in your house all day alone and just eat your snacks, you should go on iTunes or Amazon and get
The Year of Spectacular. The Year of Spectacular Men. And you can find me on Twitter. What is it? At Tammy Gouveia. Insta, Tammy Gouveia Official.
She's not from Tacoma, Washington.
Thank you for that clarification. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
Views expressed herein are those of the hosts only, not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners and principals.